Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Low, and my co-host Devendra Hardwar is out taking some time off and joining me as guest co-host this week and for the foreseeable future, because I'm going to kick Devendra off of this podcast. I kid. It is senior writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
Sam's like my big brother. In a different way that Devendra is, both of my big brothers, but...
You keep extending this weird pseudo-family tree, and I'm not entirely sure I understand how it works, but I think it works in your head, which is good enough, I guess.
That's all that matters. That's all that matters. This week, we're talking about a grab bag of news. We've got stuff from Twitter/X. We've got stuff from Google. We've got stuff from Meta. It is that kind of week. If you're enjoying the show, make sure to subscribe on your podcast catcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes or any other podcast platform. I think if we have a Google Maps thing, you could also leave us a Google Maps review. We don't. And we are still working out the kinks in bringing live streams back. So for now and for probably the rest of August, we will not have a live stream version of the recording of this show. But when we are back, hopefully that'll be Thursday mornings at about 10:30 a.m. Eastern on the Engadget YouTube channel. Just keep an eye on the Engadget Twitter or the Engadget Threads accounts to get the updates. All right, so like I mentioned, this week we're just talking about general tech news. There's no real big news topic while the rest of the team at Engadget, you know, reviews our Samsung products in the background. Sam, you've got the Z Fold 5. I've got the Z Flip 5. You're reviewing right now in earnest, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're both, you know, kind of wrapping up reviews. We've had the phones for about a week now. Yeah, and you know, they go on sale August 11th, which is coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, we're hoping to get our reviews up before that so that y'all will have some time to read, you know, learn about the performance, battery life, camera stuff before you go make your buying decisions. And this usually would be a good time for us to kind of engage with the live stream audience, ask their questions about these devices. But in lieu of that, send us your questions about either or any of the Samsung devices, or just anything in general. You can send them to podcast@engadget.com. Hit us up at Engadget on Twitter/X or on Threads. I think we're on Blue Sky and Mastodon.
I was going to say, have you officially switched to calling it X now? You've just, the bird's gone dead to you?
I don't know. I think I'm going to be like Twitter X. X Twitter. I don't know why my X Twitter actually makes sense, right? Like,
yeah, we had a story go up this week where it was in the headline. It was Twitter/X. Because I was like, I understand why we did it, and I think we kind of had to, but the whole name scheme is just a big old mess, which
it's
I guess
kind
of leads us into other news.
Yes, yes. I mean, speaking of chaos, the set of news I think that we have to talk about this week starts with a whole bunch of chaos from X, and I'm actually going to start with this stuff that happened over the weekend. Sam, I don't know if you paid attention, but at some point, I think it was Friday, Elon Musk and co. decided to put up a bright LED whatever sign at the top of their San Francisco headquarters. That was just X. And it like shone and had this like flashing pattern that
could
potentially cause
epileptic. It's just a big strobe light.
Yes.
And it was incredibly obnoxious. Apparently, there were multiple complaints from nearby occupants about, hey, this is like a big distraction and it's just like really annoying.
Yes. Across the street, by the way, from the Twitter/X headquarters was a residential building. Imagine living across the street from that, like generally chill, kind of used to be chill HQ, and then like all of this stuff happening. Suddenly you have this bright light shining into your potentially bedroom. And strobing. And it wasn't like once an hour or once a half hour. It's like every few minutes this thing would like blast off into a pattern. Oh my goodness.
So, of course, you know, after the numerous complaints and multiple social media videos documenting how awful it looked, I guess Elon finally took it down earlier this week. So it was up for maybe 2 or 3 days. It's just like, what's going on here? I don't understand the strategy.
What's the point? I think if he was talking about generating like publicity for the name, I guess it made sense. I think I also want to point out that the residential building that was across the street, there were people in there that said it's like, I'm reading different reports now. There have people saying it's a largely rent controlled building. There's a lot of seniors who live there, they're sure. And one of the residents says that they thought it was lightning at first. That's just disturbing. This is another example of Elon Musk just going ahead and doing whatever the hell he wants with no concern for people around him or whatever. So it was nice that the sign was eventually taken down on Monday, but that took a whole 3 days, right? Like, imagine having to live with that for your weekend. I would have gone over and taken it down myself. I don't know how legal that was.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm surprised people weren't out there throwing rocks at it or something.
I will say, I think there's other stuff that's been happening on X or Twitter. For example, the fave icon having switched to a new like logo, I guess, altogether, did start on Friday to throw up security alerts on Microsoft's Edge browser, which, to be clear, is a like known security issue, right? It is a valid security concern where if a website that you go to suddenly switches its fave icon or its like little web app icon there, it could be an indicator that there's a scam. They're trying to send you to a different website and phish you, right?
So yeah, it's always weird when you get that, like, you're going to a website and it's like, hey, do you really want to proceed? It's like, yeah. Oh, wait a second. I got to think about this now.
Yeah. And then, like, one of the recommendations that Edge would give, and this is a default, like, warning message, not even, like, salty specifically towards X, but it was like, we encourage you to delete this web app. Like, we encourage you to not use it anymore. But it was one of those things where it's, again, like, what were you thinking? Why didn't you think to go through this before changing something as dramatic as your, you know, logo or your icon? But cool. There's a lot, again, like we said, there's a lot that's been happening. I do want to quickly run through some of it. For example, TweetDeck has a new name. It is now X Pro, which I don't think they've thought it through either, because X Pro could be like, you used to be a pro, you know, and now you're not. Kanye West has been unbanned from Twitter/X because I guess...
Again.
Again,
this is not the first time he's been unbanned.
Good Lord. I mean, whatever. Grand scheme of things, that's very small, because also nobody's on X anymore, I hope. So nobody cares. The Twitter is also threatening to sue an anti-hate group over the research that is coming up. So it's like there's little things that's been happening with X, I think, all week, and it'll be all year, all our lives until this changes. But I think one of the more significant updates that happened earlier this week is that you can now, if you're a Twitter/X blue subscriber, you can now choose to hide your blue check mark. You know, that thing that some people pay like, what, $4-$5 a month to get?
I think it's up to $8 now, isn't it?
Oh, those mofos. Those poor, poor scammed fools. Well, I guess now you can pay for it. I mean, look, Sam, I don't know if you ever had the blue check mark.
No, I have never had a blue check mark, and mostly just for lack of trying, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't tweet a lot. You know, I'm pretty good about responding to people if they tweet at me, but like social media in general just kind of makes me tired, so I kind of steer clear of that. But I mean, this is actually like, you know, there were a couple nice features in X Blue or whatever, you know, they want to call it, but I think it's definitely a mark of shame to be like, oh, I'm paying Elon money to use the hate web, the angry hate speech website. And it's just like, okay, well, at least I can do this and kind of hide it. I guess that's good.
My favorite thing is the whole like storyline of this, right? It started with, yeah, now people can pay to have blue check marks because F you, blue check mark people, because y'all ain't shit. Like, I was a former blue check mark person. I was like verified.
It used to be like kind of exclusive. Like, you would have to like apply and you have to know somebody to like, you know, hey, can you like vet this person and then so they can get their check mark?
Right. I had to jump through hoops. I had to like show proof of identity. I had to like link my author bio page to my Twitter page, that sort of thing, right? And so for me, when that discussion around like who deserves a blue check mark was going around, because that's kind of one of the reasons Elon Musk made it a paid feature too, right? Like, all these people aren't worthy of their verified marks. I'm like, all right, that's true. I'm no one. I don't think I deserve a blue check mark. Well, as a status symbol, I guess. I'm not nowhere near someone like Mark Ruffalo who like truly needs to be verified. I mean, I was verified. I have been like identity stolen before, like people have impersonated me to get jobs before. So like, I think my blue check mark helped me in that. But eventually the arc of this story is that like, it used to be such a thing you would pay money for. Now it's like it's
completely meaningless now.
It's meaningless. So people started like taking off the actual like formerly verified people like me. And then some of us during the period where you still had your blue check mark up and you were formerly, like, you were legacy verified, remember? And then you would click down and then, like, the meaning of, like, what your blue check mark means would come up. And, like, people would be like, yes, I am a legacy verified person as opposed to a paid for Twitter blue person. And then the next stage was, like, they removed the different explanations altogether. And you just had a blue check mark whether you paid for it or not. During that time, me and a whole bunch of people went on our profiles and were like, I did not pay. I did not pay for the blue check mark.
I remember.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, people didn't want to be associated with it.
Exactly. So now, after all of that uproar, after all of that back and forth over nothing, now you can pay to not, you pay for it, and then you can choose to hide it. I just, what a ride. What a journey. I just, listen, if in 2 years, Elon Musk doesn't walk away from X, I will eat paper.
I'm writing this down. 2 years, because I don't think it's gonna happen. He's going down with the ship.
With the ship.
it's his company. He's like, you know, they hired a new CEO, and like she just seems to do everything that Elon says. And yes. I don't really understand it.
I think in two to five years, I think, but 2 years. I don't mind eating paper. Let's do it. 2 years.
Okay. mark it down. August, okay. 2025.
We're on record here. August 2025. I will eat paper if Elon Musk hasn't walked away from X/Twitter. And you know, he has to walk away. It doesn't matter if like Linda Yaccarino is still there or whatever. We don't care. Just Elon has to walk away. You know, another reason Elon might have to walk away is that Tesla might be in trouble. This week, we learned that U.S. regulators are investigating Tesla over Model 3 and Model Y steering issues. Haha, none of the Model X, because X is so good. So looks like Tesla software had been inflating range, and the team at the company was tasked with suppressing those complaints. Sam, you're more up to speed about EVs than I am. What does this mean to you in general?
Yeah, so these are kind of two separate things. You know, the Model 3 and Model Y were having steering issues, which in a car is actually kind of important. And so, you know, drivers were claiming that they were unable to steer or they suffered a loss of power steering while driving. And obviously, that's a big concern. So the NHTSA is investigating that. Alternatively, and this we're going to get into this more later. There's been a big report about Tesla inflating the range of their cars so that people, you know, as they're driving, they think, hey, I have 200 miles of range left. And they just weren't getting that. And it seems that a lot of people were complaining about this and they were scheduling service appointments to Tesla to get their car looked at because it's like, hey, you know, consumers, you know, owners, they're not getting the range that they expect from their car. So they're like, okay, let's inspect it. Let's check it out. Unfortunately, Tesla, because of their, you know, rapid growth over the last few years, they don't have the service centers or the personnel available to handle that amount of requests for investigation or to look at their car. And so they made a team to basically say, we're going to cancel some of these service requests because, you know, the car is operating as normal, even though people don't think that it necessarily is. And so this kind of ties into a recent report done by Consumer Reports, kind of showing how the range of EVs depends a lot based on the ambient temperature. And I think a lot of people kind of know this intuitively because, you know, you see this most on cameras where, like, you know, you're taking a nice fancy mirrorless camera or DSLR out into the wild, and if it's really cold, cold batteries just don't have the same battery life that you would get if, you know, it's at 70 degrees or 80 degrees. And actually the same thing holds true if it's really, really hot too. You know, you see this in phones. If you go to the beach and you leave your phone out in the sun, you're actually get, and it can overheat or it can actually get reduced battery life. And obviously EVs that have huge batteries inside them have the same kind of issues. But because the, you know, EVs are kind of a new thing in general, people don't necessarily think about them the same way they think about traditional gas cars. And so they kind of expect that, like, hey, the range is what I'm going to get. I always get 26 miles to a gallon or whatever. I always get 230 or 300 miles of range on my EV if I have a full charge.
Right.
And so, you know, they come out with a system and saying, hey, a lot of EVs don't get the range that you expect, especially in cooler temperatures or very hot temperatures. And even some of the estimates in normal temperatures are a little optimistic compared to, you know, your more realistic driving estimates.
So this isn't like this is not like a Tesla specific issue, is it? Like every other
as far as the range concerns, no, this is very much not a Tesla specific issue. Consumer Reports tested some other EVs from other manufacturers, and you know, the numbers change depending on the thing, but it was very clear. Like you were seeing drops of 100 miles of range in cold weather. So, you know, if your EV has 275 or 300 miles of range, you know, when at 100%, in colder weather, you're getting more like 150. And, you know, that can be a big issue if you're planning a trip, especially in the winter.
And it's also like not an indicator, sort of like a gas meter in your car that updates live, is it? Or is it that?
Right. And so, you know, this all goes back to, you know, how EVs are designed. And so, you know, one thing that Tesla has been accused of is like being a little too optimistic in their range estimates, so that especially in the first 50% of the battery, it would be very optimistic. And so people would think they have more range than they actually do. And then as the battery capacity drained a little bit down below 50%, then they would kind of pull back those numbers. And so people were seeing their range shrink a lot pretty faster than they were expecting. You know, some people it was alarming for them. And so, you know, that's just one of the things that, like, you know, as people shift from gas cars to EVs, it's one of the things that, like, you may not necessarily think about, but you kind of need to consider if you're training, you know, planning a longer trip.
Now, we're seeing some interesting quotes, too, from the Reuters report that said that, has anonymous sources saying things like Elon wanted to show good range numbers when fully charged. When you buy a car off the lot, you see 350-mile, 400-mile range, it makes you feel good. So this, again, sounds like a sort of like Elon Musk strategizing in a very scheming way.
Yeah, and if you look at EVs in general, you know, Tesla is one of the nice things about Tesla is that they're generally regarded as having a more range than similar size EVs. You know, the Tesla Model Y, the long range model can get like 330-ish miles of range, right, whereas like similar cars from, you know, say Volvo or Polestar or Kia or whatever, you know, they're closer to 275, 300. So, you know, and so they want, you know, Elon's trying to push that, but the issue is like how far when you push that is, does it become like misleading or even dangerous to the consumer?
Oh, it absolutely in my mind is dangerous, because you'd go on a road trip, like you said, and thinking you have, and especially like after the 50% mark, what, like you were saying, if it suddenly just drops a lot, you know, you find yourself nowhere near a charging station, then you're SOL, I guess. Apparently Tesla was also fined earlier this year by South Korean regulators, because the cars were delivering as little as half of their advertised range in cold weather. And another study that found three Tesla models averaged 26% below their advertised ranges. So it sounds like A, we need more regulation everywhere, and B, Tesla and Elon Musk need to be more upfront. Because yeah, sure, it might sound more competitive when your car's like max range sounds like it's 350 to 400 miles on a charge, but completely inaccurate. You lose consumer trust altogether. Who's going to buy a Tesla? I don't know. Are people still buying Teslas? Aren't people returning their Teslas? That's what I've been hearing because of Elon Musk stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the whole, you know, EV market is kind of in a weird spot right now, because back in the pandemic, all cars were just like, inflation was going through the roof. There wasn't enough supply for anything. And, you know, so cars were getting marked up like crazy. Now that, you know, we're kind of coming out of that, the prices of EVs and cars in general, especially used cars, is starting to come down a little bit.
Right.
And there are some dealerships who are saying that like they have an oversupply of EVs that are just sitting in lots waiting for people to buy them. And so it's kind of interesting because we've seen this rush to, like, you know, especially when gas prices were a lot higher during the pandemic, people are like, oh man, I should really consider an EV just because, you know, I'm going to save some money on fuel prices. But, you know, I think we're still very much in this like first wave of like mass adoption for EVs. And so you have a lot of the people who were like, okay, I like EVs. I want to get something. I want to get an electric car. And they went out and got it. And then now we're waiting for like the next wave of people to be like, hey, is it time for me to finally jump on this bandwagon? And we're kind of seeing that, like, you know, a lot of that kind of pressure that was pushing people toward EV is kind of fading away. And so a lot of that inventory is still kind of sitting around a little bit.
I mean, I'm interested more in like hybrids. From what I hear, hybrids are where it's at right now.
You get the kind of best of both worlds. You know, you get that, you know, you don't have to worry about range anxiety and stuff like that. On the flip side, you know, they can be a little bit more expensive and a little bit more complicated because you have to worry about a gas engine and a electric motor. And, you know, if you are really, really high on like the environmental concerns, it's not quite as green. But, you know, there's like everything, there's trade-offs.
It's definitely more green than a full gas vehicle. So,
It's also always important to remember, if you really are, you know, want to be as eco-friendly as possible, buy a used car, because there's nothing worse than just like buying new cars just to buy new cars, because, you know, you're feeding into the consumer, you know, cycle. But, you know, if you can, you know, keep your car that you have running as long as you possibly can, buy used. There's all different ways to approach, you know, the kind of issue of, hey, we want to be eco-conscious in terms of our vehicles. And necessarily just buying a new EV just to have something is not always the best choice.
Fun fact, in Singapore, cars have to be scrapped after 10 years. Did you know that? Yeah.
But I mean, Singapore has a very weird car culture because it costs like thousands and thousands of dollars just to get a permit, right?
Thousands is underselling it.
Okay. Yeah, because it's like 50,000 or more.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the car. So in Singapore, we have this thing called the Certificate of Entitlement, or the COE, that allows you to buy a car. And the cost of the COE depends on the cost of your car that you're trying to buy. Sometimes you had to bid for it. So this is an effort to keep the number of cars down in Singapore.
Right, because Singapore, you know, it's small, doesn't have a lot of roads, doesn't have a lot of space for cars, doesn't have a lot of space for people.
There's like, we have no more parking lots. We have no more space for cars. Our expressways are as wide as we can make them without cutting down more forestry. Like, it's just, you know, a struggle. So that's why cars are way more expensive in Singapore. And the scrapping of cars after 10 years thing is less about keeping the numbers down and more about making sure like up-to-date vehicles are on the streets, I guess.
Oh, that's interesting. Like, so they want to make sure that cars are more recent, have, you know, better efficiency, better technology.
I don't really know the full reasoning. I just know that like after 10 years, they have to be scrapped. And that's pretty much it. You can buy secondhand vehicles, but that market is really like small in Singapore, at least that I know.
I was going to say, because that severely cuts down on your time frame for ownership, because you buy a 5-year-old used car, it's like, okay, I can only have this car for another 5 years.
Yes. Also in Singapore, the second you buy a car, you lose 20% of the value because it's immediately like the lifespan is down by so much. So wasn't there some news from Ford also this week about the F-150 Lightning production, Sam?
Yep. So after Ford kind of shut down F-150 Lightning production, partly to retool the factory because previously they weren't making as many cars as I think there was demand for. And so they shut down production, they retooled, and they're hoping to bring it back and really ramp up production. The company says it expects up to triple the numbers after upgrading their factory. So if you are in the market for a big, expensive EV truck, you know, this is probably some good news. Maybe you don't... I know the wait list for that car was like a year or more at certain points.
Right.
And so I think it's come down recently, but, you know, hopefully it brings those wait times down. So, hey, if you want a truck, you can actually go and buy one.
Isn't it similar to the Rivian trucks? Is it like in the same market?
EV trucks in general, there's been a ton of you know, new EV trucks. There's that Ram that we saw back at CES. Rivian has been on the market. Devendra was testing out the SUV version of the Rivian. And so, yeah, EV trucks. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, having an EV truck where you can, you know, power your tools and, you know, power stuff like that on the work site, it actually makes a lot of sense. So, you know, it seems like an interesting application of that. It's still a bit too early to tell how, you know, adoption is going to be, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And didn't Tesla have a Cybertruck?
Well, they announced it. You still can't buy one, and it's very unclear when it will go on sale, but, you know, we'll see.
Oh, if only Elon Musk would get his act together. It could be so good. It could be. Anyway, speaking of taking down Elon Musk, I don't know if that's what we're talking about. Maybe that's the topic this week. Maybe that's the theme. We're taking down Elon, taking down X. We have heard this week about news out of Meta. Meta may be planning some retention hooks to keep people using Threads, which is the company's Twitter competitor, or I guess ex-competitor. Reuters reports that Mark Zuckerberg had a sort of internal meeting, like an internal town hall, talking about Threads and how, yes, it has had 100 million signups in, you know, within the first week of launch, but that the drop off is not great. It's, you know, we saw again news last week that like people are already stopped, like, you know, not as engaged on Threads as they were at the start. We've got a quote from the Reuters report saying that Zuck said, obviously, if you have more than 100 million people sign up, ideally, it would be awesome if all of them or even half of them stuck around. We're not there yet. So like not even half of them are sticking around is not great. So during this town hall, apparently, Zuckerberg said he considered the drop off to be normal and expects retention to grow as the company adds more features, including a desktop version and search functionality. Hello. We've been only asking about this for this since the birth of Threads. I mean, we now have the following tab, which is nice, and you can see people you follow as opposed to just the algorithm feed. Meta is looking at adding more, quote, retention driving hooks, according to the article, to entice more users to return to the app, like making sure that people who are on Instagram can see important threads. So, okay, this week, what also happened was Donald Trump was indicted for the third time on 4 counts of stuff. Like, my God, I can't even remember what it was this time around already. Like, conspiracy and, like, all of the January 6th stuff, right? Here's the thing. When something like that happens, I think a lot of us in the business are inclined to, like, run straight to Twitter and check out what's trending, to see all the updates, to see what people are saying, to laugh at all the funny memes and the jokes. Nobody wants to do that this time around. I mean, I'm sure some people did. I was finding out from Threads. I was finding out all the stuff from Threads, but I couldn't like go to a trending tab to find out more, to see what people were saying. And that's when it was like painfully clear that like as much as Threads has a lot of the people and has some of the features, it's still not there. And it's still not the place people go to talk about these like cultural moments, these like newsworthy moments. At least not yet. And it really should have been. It could have been.
For sure. I mean, I think that's kind of a product of how Threads came about because, hey, they linked it to Instagram. So anyone with an Instagram, it was super easy to sign up. You logged in, you used it, and you're like, oh, there's a lot of missing features that X or Twitter or whatever already has. And so they're like, hey, this is kind of fun. And you know, you had a really fun early buzz, but like, you know, there's still more people over on Twitter. So if you really are, you know, want to make yourself heard or say something, your best chance is probably still on Twitter, at least for now. I think, you know, Meta is very, very aware of this. And, you know, they're hoping to capitalize on the chaos over at X. This is going to be a very ongoing issue for Zuck and Threads.
I mean, I can't remember if it was this week too, but Elon Musk also tweeted something about like how, it's got the highest monthly users on X or something. Like engagement is really high for X, and everybody was like, "You're lying, bro. Like, you just chill. You're not stop lying to us." Obviously, the competition between Threads and Twitter is there. It is still growing. And yet on Friday, we learned that Zuckerberg, possibly during the same town hall, said something like it's might not the Zuck versus Musk cage match is likely not happening.
Is it bad that I'm kind of sad about that?
We're all sad.
Okay, I kind of wanted to see it go down. Italy was even offering to let them fight in the Colosseum. Oh, that would have been absolutely nutty.
Oh my God, it's fucking wild. The UFC was like, yeah, we're here to adjudicate if you need. People were like training the different... Musk was training. Musk apparently has a special move called the Walrus, apparently.
Well, and, you know, for years, Zuckerberg has been training, I think it's jiu-jitsu. So, like, you know, he already has some experience. And it's like... I think it's a little barbaric, don't get me wrong, but I think everybody would be very tuned in for that.
We would be very excited to see. I think that would be like the fight of the century. Like move over, Manny Pacquiao. Like we we want Zuck versus Muck. We've got more news out of Meta, potentially from that town hall or not, Instagram appears to be working on labels to identify posts that have been generated by Meta AI, which would be nice to if it really were happening. Meta is also reportedly planning an Abe Lincoln chatbot as part of a public AI push. So I guess, cool, we'll have another chatbot to play with because we don't have enough already.
I really have to wonder, do we need this?
Do we need any?
Do people need to chat with Abe Lincoln on like a regular basis?
I don't know, bro. I never wanted to talk to Abe Lincoln except for after I watched Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I was like, bro, did you really know?
Yeah.
That would be my first question.
Our producer Ben is bringing up a good point. It's how long can people find a way to trick AI Abe Lincoln into saying some really dumb stuff?
Yeah.
It's inevitable. There's no way this ends up working out well.
Yeah, stuff to do with, like, Abe Lincoln's own legacy, probably, too. So, we'll see how Meta handles this. I don't think they have the best track record of handling potentially controversial stuff. I mean, I still don't think we've forgotten about Microsoft's Tay. It's been done. And look, we don't need another chatbot. We all the more don't need a themed chatbot, but I guess if it's jumping on the bandwagon, if Meta is not going to focus on the metaverse, it's going to focus on AI, I guess, and threats, and jujitsu. A company that has been laser focused on AI seems to be Google. I mean, Google's been making AI its bitch for years now.
Okay, that's an interesting way of putting it.
Sure. I mean, I try to be entertaining on this show. This week we learned Google may be looking to, quote, supercharge the assistant, the Google Assistant, with AI. It is Axios obtained an internal email that has Google Assistant's Vice President Piyush Ranjan and the product director Duke Duklis, which, damn, that's a good name, Dukalis? Basically, D-U-K-E, D-U-K-E-L-L-I-S. What a name. What a name. But this was a staff email and that says that, hey, as a team, we need to focus on delivering high quality, critical product experiences for our users. We've seen the profound potential of generative AI to transform people's lives and see a huge opportunity to explore what a supercharged assistant powered by the latest large language model technology would look like. The email also stated that Google's already working on doing this for mobile devices. Now, I can tell you I'm not surprised, right? I mean, like, this doesn't surprise you.
I was gonna say, this is like, credit to Axios. It's hard to get, you know, some concrete information, concrete leaks and stuff like that, but this is also the most like logical thing for Google to be doing. Google is like, they've made their bread and butter on the Google Assistant and
exactly,
you know, adding smarter features into their devices. And hey, the Tensor chip, it has more more powerful NPUs to deliver higher capacity AI and machine learning performance. If Google isn't doing this, then they're fucking up. So
right, exactly.
This is like a very logical next step for Google. I wouldn't be surprised to see these features get added, you know, throughout the next few years, like, you know, piece by piece. The Pixel phone line is like the perfect breeding ground for all of this stuff.
Exactly. I just want my assistant to be smarter. Honestly, just do my work for me already. File my expenses for me,
Yes, please.
Come on, listen. You can do so much. Google, I know Google listens to this show. Hello. Listen, if you want to take this back to product people, filing my expenses for me, doing stuff that would like hurt, that would help me a lot. Make the assistant do that. Sam, what's on your wish list?
Concur, where's your AI assistant, please?
Yeah, Concur. Yeah, Workday. We're looking at all of you. What is that big like company that starts with S? Salesforce. Get into it. Use AI for good, for reducing all of these administrative tasks. I don't need another... I mean, I guess I really like the idea of Project Tailwind and that notebook thing. But okay, other than that, come on. You put your AI to better work. Speaking of putting AI to better work, YouTube is testing AI-generated video summaries. The description, basically, of what a video contains or a quick overview of a clip is usually, I think, written by humans. YouTube is currently testing using AI to generate these video summaries on the search and the watch pages. It is currently only visible with a limited number of English language videos and only for some viewers. They will also appear on mobile devices for how-to videos, shopping videos, and vlogs. People around the world will see these videos. There are some preview features that were coming to YouTube that we've seen recently, like premium subscribers locking screens during playback, to prevent accidental, commands. You can also turn shorts comments into entirely new short form clips. So basically making YouTube shorts a bit more like TikTok. We are seeing YouTube continue to use AI to, I guess, automate a lot of these like tedious tasks. AI generated summaries, AI generated captions, AI generated or AI produced video chapters, using, I guess, generative AI to do so. I think it's useful. I'm just concerned. In the past, I mean, AI generated closed captions are not really accurate, but with improvements to things like Lambda 2 and large language models over at Google, we should hopefully see that improve.
Right. As it stands, like if you're a YouTube creator, you should be writing your own descriptions for your videos and whatnot. And this is nice for people who are just getting into, you know, making videos or whatnot. And they, you know, they don't know all that stuff. And so, you know, they can have an AI kind of populate these fields. But ideally, you know, you want someone to like, hey, you made the video, you know what's in it best, you can probably write a better description than an AI, or at least for now.
Yeah, maybe some people don't like to write, and I get it with generative AI. Like, I'm seeing a lot of people who don't usually like to write find it very helpful, right? Like writing emails. I take so much joy in writing emails, but I get it. Not everyone wants to.
Sherlyn, you're well known around Engadget for having interesting out of office email responses vacation.
Yeah.
Would you ever use an AI to write your out of office, or do you get too much fun from doing that?
I get so much fun from writing my out of office. I would never relegate that to AI. I would get AI to write my "I agree to the embargo. Please send the details" all the time, please. And the number of times I had to say that every day, geez, I would get AI to like scan my inbox and be like, 7,000 of these don't need to be read. There you go. Go for it. that would be my ideal AI inbox tool. All right, moving on to some quick hit news items from this week. We learned about some new PS5 beta software. Sam, what can you tell us about this?
Yep. It's beta, so they're still kind of in testing, but it rolls out some new accessibility features. You can use a second PS5 controller to, you know, kind of make it easier for you to use controls, especially if you, you know, aren't have issues using a traditional controller with just, you know, one hand or two hands. There's also some new audio options, some new social features, and interesting, there's support for higher capacity SSDs, which, as everybody has been noticing, games are getting bigger, and so for people who want to download their games, especially if you have that digital-only PS5, you may want to upgrade to a higher capacity M.2 SSD. And so they're saying you can get to up to 8 terabyte drives in the PS5, which should be, hey, it should make it a little bit easier to store all your favorite games. I think Call of Duty is like upwards of 150 gigs nowadays. So like 5 to 10 games and you're suddenly like way over 1 terabyte. So yeah, that should be nice.
That would be nice. Now, another thing that would be nice is if the iPhone used USB-C to charge, and it might be coming, according to the latest report from Mark Gurman, Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, who is a known, you know, leaker / estimator of upcoming iPhone features. We're learning that the iPhone 15 may have everything from like thinner bezels and the, you know, the iPhone 15 and 15 Plus, which is the non-pro models, they might be getting the dynamic island instead of a notch. So goodbye forever notch. But to me, the most interesting is that the iPhone 15 might finally switch over from Lightning to USB-C charging ports. Holy nice.
Do you want to do another bet? Because I don't think that's happening this year. I think maybe next year you might see it, but I would put my money against seeing a USB-C iPhone in 2023. Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. The European Union announced last year that all smartphones and tablets sold in that region must have a USB-C charging port starting in 2024. So if you're
which is the main reason why I don't think it's happening this year. Well, but companies don't change unless you make them, and they're right. Not being forced to do it this year.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know what I'm betting on. So I wonder if Apple could like, you know, make it early enough to like your phone that you buy in 2023 will meet the standard for 2024 instead of waiting till 2024 to launch the phone. You know what I mean? Like, anyway. But we'll have to wait and see. I dream that it will have a USB-C. Speaking of dreams, there's a fun game, Zen moving game called Unpacking. I know you are familiar with this game. Sam, you and your wife are familiar with it. This week, we learned that it's coming to Android and iOS on August 24th. You bet some money I will be downloading that.
Unpacking is just one of those, like, really chill, relaxing... I think a lot of people call it, like, a cozy game, because it's just, like, you know, you just do it to, like, wind down. It's not... It's very slow-paced, and it's, like... it's, you know, kind of a blend between, like, a puzzle game and a kind of just, like, you know, relaxing, casual game. It's fun. Everyone should try it out, especially now that it's available on mobile. It seems like a perfect application of this. This does not need, like, tight controls. Very easy to play on a phone. Although I'm wondering, some of the objects are a little bit smaller, so I'm wondering how that's going to work with, touch controls.
The only thing that's keeping me from playing it is it costs $10. What? Come on. Sherlyn, the iOS version can be...
Sherlyn.
What?
Pay for your games, okay? If you like a game... The people who made it, they deserve a little bit money. But more importantly, if you pay full price for a game, that sends a message to all the people who keep stuffing microtransactions in games.
Yeah.
Okay? Remember, like, 3 or 4 years ago, Nintendo came out with a Mario game that was full price. And people were, like, flipping out because they were used to having free games with microtransactions on mobile. And so, basically... Nintendo gave up on trying to make high-quality, full-price games or, you know, games with a set price on mobile, and that's just kind of disappointing.
I get it. Listen, I'm also sick of playing solitaire and having to wait for an ad every time I need to play a new round. I get it.
I know. And if you like a game, you know, the developers deserve a little money, a little monetary support.
Okay, Unpacking can get my money, or maybe, you know, Sam can buy it for me since he talks such a big game.
We'll see. Maybe for Christmas.
Okay, speaking of games and microtransactions, yesterday I checked out a new experience called Replica at the Met Museum in New York. Basically, the Met Metropolitan Museum of Art teamed up with Verizon to launch an app called Replica. And it basically allows you to use an app to run around the museum looking for certain specific pieces of art, including things like Perseus and Medusa or like King Henry the 7th or 8th, sorry, suit of armor, and stuff like that, and scan them using your phone and then turn them into these like digital items that you can then convert into Roblox items. And look, if you do not have a kid in your life, you probably do not know Roblox is hype.
I was gonna say, you were telling me about this, you said you were kind of struggling a little bit to release your inner child.
Oh, struggling a little bit, bro. Watch the video. We have a video coming up on Engadget.com. It is not Engadget.com, Engadget's YouTube channel, maybe Engadget.com. You will watch me struggle to bring out my inner child. It will be fun for you to watch, not me. I had very little fun with this. But hey, it's starting today, August 3rd. If you're in the New York area, you have someone in your life that loves digital experiences like this, or, you know, wants to collect all kinds of items for their Roblox collection, there are 37 pieces of art up for grabs. Converting them into digital items through the app. App is free. Experience is free. Entry to the Met costs probably about $30. But yeah, it's a fun day. I thought, honestly, for the video, I thought I was going to be able to like collect 10 items. It's kind of like a treasure hunt. You kind of run around looking at the app with clues as to where these items are. And I spent like an hour looking for one item. Because I dumb. I was also a little bit...
Hey, it's a big museum.
Yeah, well, we were confined to one room, but okay, thanks. Thanks for okay. Your kindness.
Oh, boy.
But yes, anyway, yeah, go check it out if you're in the New York area anytime this summer. Sam, one last piece of news this week that was very funny for me to see that we covered anyway was that Mr. Beast is suing his fast food chain for selling, quote, inedible burgers. Have you seen this?
I mean, look, I cannot say I've ordered a Mr. Beast burger ever, but I mean, the whole thing is like, you know, a few years ago, Mr. Beast came out with his Mr. Beast burger, so you can go on all your favorite food ordering apps and, you know, order a Mr. Beast burger. And I was just sitting here this whole time, I was like, what the hell does Mr. Beast know about making burgers? Like, the dude makes on YouTube and, like, His whole thing is like throwing a ton of money and giving away cars and, you know, doing crazy stunts. So as it turns out, obviously Mr. Beast was not making the burgers himself, and he had contracted out his brand to Virtual Dining Concepts. And, you know, they're kind of a ghost kitchen service. And this is, ghost kitchens have been, you know, a trend that's been growing over the past few years. And so they were using the Mr. Beast brand to make Mr. Beast burgers and sell them to people. And now Jimmy Donaldson, a.k.a. Mr. Beast, is suing VDC because it seems like they're more interested in expanding their foothold than making a decent burger, which is kind of sad, but also not entirely unexpected.
Yeah, I think so it's funny. Yeah.
Go on. And the YouTuber points out that numerous Mr. Beast burger reviews call the food inedible, revolting, and just downright unappetizing. And
apparently,
this is,
there's
like,
raw
thousands
meat.
Customers.
Raw meat. Raw meat. Are you kidding me? Raw meat, Sam. I can't.
Mm-hmm. And so, obviously, this is like, you know, one of those things is like, number one, why are you ordering food from like a YouTube influencer? Like, okay. And the other thing is, like, what are you expecting? Like, these are burgers. There's some cheese on it, maybe some ketchup, and a ton of grease. And it's like, you can get that level of burger anywhere. But for some reason, obviously, Mr. Beast has a ton of subscribers on YouTube, big, big audience. And, you know, a lot of these kids, a lot of his fans are kids. And so maybe, you know, they're not thinking about it too clearly. They're just like, hey, I want to, you know, buy something from the creator that I watch a lot. And so I think that's why, like, it's really important that influencers who are, you know, licensing out their brand really do a quality inspection of their, you know, these products that are using their name. Yeah.
So let's just say it's not just influencers, right? Because I've told you this in our real world life before, Sam, that I've seen on Uber Eats the DJ Khaled wing stop or like ghost kitchen thing where it's like, it's another wing, basically. It's another one. I just was like, yeah, let's try this. I was tempted to try it because it's funny. I never did. Dear listener, I'm more sensible than that. But it's obviously not just influencers. Some celebrities too. And ghost kitchens are definitely like still around. I feel like maybe less so. I don't see the another wing thing on my food delivery apps anymore.
And so the kind of scary thing about ghost kitchens is that you can make an infinite number of all these different restaurant brands. And so there's been people who have, you know, traced these back and they say, oh, there's 15 different restaurants operating out of the same facility because they just go on these, you know, Uber Eats and they make, you know, a fake restaurant and a fake name. But it's the same people making all the same food. And so it makes it really difficult for, you know, when you're ordering stuff online to really figure out, hey, am I getting quality stuff? Or is it there people just, hey, they're churning it out and they're making a couple slight tweaks just so I can get something that, like, you know, by the description is what I want to eat. But yeah, it's tough out there.
It's like the white label market for devices here, right? Like you can buy one like fitness tracker, but it's branded to be like by several different things on Amazon, but it's actually all boils down to the same manufacturer operating in a factory somewhere and not in America. It seems like it's happening to food now.
Yeah. I was doing some research. This happens a lot with like, like, you know, lesser, not exactly brand name goods, like for example, in-dash car cameras. Because if you think about it, there's only a handful of companies that make camera sensors, right? And so a lot of these companies are buying the same sensor and maybe they're, you know, they're making their own software. A lot of times they're not. And so, you know, you have a device that is functionally the same and has very similar specs, but has a different brand name on the actual device. And so it really puts a lot of the burden on the consumer to like figure out, hey, who's making my device? Who's making my food in this case? And, you know, how much are they really responsible and how much do they care about making a good product?
All right, moving on. We have a listener question of sorts this week since we have some time. It's not really a real listener, I don't think. So this question came to me through Dennis from our studios team, or now our video Yahoo Finance video team. And Dennis asked me a very interesting question yesterday. He is a Pixel and Android user, and he's wondering, is it worth switching over to iPhone And I know this is an eternal question, but I thought since we have some time this episode, plus we also love to use it as an opportunity to tell you if you're listening and, you know, instead of being able to watch the live stream, you missed the banter, you can always reach us via email, podcast@engadget.com. Sam, what are your thoughts on this Android versus iPhone thing? Because I gave Dennis a quick answer that I can repeat quickly here, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, first, also, anyone who wants to ask us questions, the weirder the better. So absolutely, please send them in.
Weirder the better.
Yeah, 100%. I love the weird questions. Anyways, when it comes to deciding on whether to switch from one mobile OS to another, I think it's interesting that he mentioned that he was curious, because I feel like unless you have that desire to switch, if you get pulled over to Android or iOS and you don't want to be there, you're going to absolutely hate it. Now, that said, like, you know, if he's curious about switching, you know, there's could be a lot of reasons for that. Like, hey, it sucks that it's the way it is, but if you have a lot of people on iMessage or Apple Messages and you want to be in that chat, sometimes it actually just makes it easier to have an iPhone to be able to talk to those people. That the whole green bubble, blue bubble divide definitely still exists. But on top of that, like, you know, if you are using your a Mac as your daily driver laptop, you know, there is an there's a very tangible benefit to being in Apple's ecosystem. And this is like this is the biggest kind of sticking point that, you know, prevents people from switching from one to another. And because the Android Windows like relationship ecosystem just isn't quite as friendly, you know, I can definitely see people wanting to go and switch from Android to iPhone. That said, you know, there are some certain things that, like, you know, you can't sideload apps on iOS. And there's very concrete limitations on, you know, what you can do on Apple's platform. You know, that transition point is how much frustration are you willing to deal with in that switchover time?
There's definitely like a transitional period where it's going to suck, but then once you get used to everything, it's fine. So here was my answer to him, and I'll shorten it sort of. I said that, like, sure, like it won't probably hurt or sting too much to change once you get past the transitional period, but get ready. If you switch to iPhone, you're never switching back. That's what I think. I mean, like, the green bubble, blue bubble thing, you will lose all those friend groups almost immediately. The fact is that currently, you know, Apple doesn't support RCS, and that's going to make it difficult for any sort of cross-device chatting, and that kind of, you know, by default leaves, like, gates Android users from that ecosystem. What Sam said about the interoperability between Macs and iPhones absolutely makes sense. I wish Windows, actually, now that you're talking about it, I wish Windows just shipped by default with support for Android phones to, like, work seamlessly on laptops as the, you know, how MacBooks do it, right?
Yeah, the Your Phone app, but it's still kind of clunky. Like, very, very basic stuff, like, hey, there's no back gesture on iOS.
That was my biggest, like, I miss it so much. So recently I also, like, answered a thread about, like, yeah, switching over. And me, I think, and Dan Seifert from Verge, and I think David Ruddick from somewhere now. Sorry, David. We were talking about this. And so the things I would miss most or I like most about iPhone that keep me locked in are, surprisingly, AirDrop. I just love AirDrop. I know Nearby Share exists, but it's just not as good of an experience. And then Apple Watch, obviously, as someone who, like, loves to track daily activity, I love Apple Watch. But what I would not, like, what I miss about Android, because I've been maining iPhone for a bit, cameras are just always so much better on a Pixel phone. You also get, I think, I like the back gesture a lot. That one I miss so much. Every day I just yearn for it. And also Pixel UI. I think there's a lot about Pixel UI that I love. Call screening is something that's
great. Pixel UI, the Pixel Recorder.
Pixel Recorder is on my list too, yes. Just a lot of good things that I miss. So let's just answer this shortly, right? Yeah, there are reasons to go to iPhone, but you'll be giving some stuff up. Or if you're going over to Android, you'll also be giving some stuff up. You know what the ultimate nice answer is? Y'all play nice. Google and Apple, y'all just be nice to each other. Why can't you? Anyway. I just got real angry mom mode there. So anyway, send us your listener questions. Like Sam said, the weirder, the better. They should be about tech. But, like, if they're not, I don't think we really mind. But, like, we will probably not answer them on air. maybe privately. I don't know. But yes, send us your questions about tech, any sort of advice you need, any thoughts about new products, send them our way at podcast@engadget.com. Moving on to what we're working on this week. Sam, I suspect I know what you're working on, but tell us.
Yes, I'm working on the Z Fold 5 review, doing a little bit comparison between the Z Fold 5 and the Pixel Fold now that, hey, Samsung actually has competition in the foldable space outside of China.
Lovely. I myself am also working on Samsung things, Galaxy Z Flip 5 review, along with the Galaxy Watch 6 Classic review. Like I said, some secrets are in the works as well, but I think I should be working on not working. Hopefully taking a break soon as well. Around Engadget, the rest of our team has also been hard at work. James True, our editor-at-large, produced a story this week about Amazon Amp and how it is the under-the-radar app that is trying to reinvent radio. Give it a read, especially if you're an audiophile or a podcast fan. Sam, I also want to shout out that you published a piece this week about the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 4 and its durability. Has Samsung fixed its foldable phone's biggest weakness?
Yeah, this has sort of become a yearly tradition for me because anyone who listens to me is probably not surprised to know that I'm a big fan of foldable devices. And so one of the big questions about foldables is how durable are they? And so, you know, for the last three generations, I've bought the latest Samsung Z Fold and, you know, used it for a year without a case. And so this is kind of just me talking about it. And surprisingly, the screen protector on my Z Fold 4 hasn't bubbled up really until actually just this week. So it's been a full year without any sort of real bubbling or screen protector issues. That said, as you'll find in the story, not sure they've completely solved that. Definitely go to Engadget.com for more. The thing I'm wondering is, Sherlyn, what do you think I should do? Should I use the Z Fold 5 for a year, or should I switch to the Pixel Fold for a year? Because we don't know anything about Google's durability for its foldables.
I think you should do both, but if I had to pick, it would
Can only really daily drive one phone at a time, though.
Well, my vote's for the Pixel Fold. I don't know about you. What's your vote?
I'm sort of leaning that way just because Google, you know, this is Google's first foldable phone. They're still kind of an unknown quantity. And, you know, they've made some interesting design departures from the Z Fold series. And so I'm really curious to see how that kind of holds up over time. And, you know, who knows if Google is going to release a Pixel Fold 2 or they, you know, go the way of Microsoft and kind of drop the Duo sooner than people might expect.
Well, let's move on to our Engadget picks for the week. Sam, let me get through mine because I have a quick list of things. This week, I have just not been doing any watching of pop culture things or relaxing. Really, I've just been out here living life. My recommendation is I recently went planned a bachelorette thing. And we went to a few fun things that I want to recommend people in the New York City area check out. We went to this Rise Bar for drag brunch. It was top-notch, great entertainment. If that's the kind of thing you're looking for a celebration, go. It's so much fun. We also went to this custom fragrance workshop thing called Olfactory NYC. There are several locations. We went to the Soho one. You'll have fun there if you like anything to do with fragrances at all. It's not about perfumes, only you do body lotion.
But you did make your own perfume, right?
I did. I made my own perfume. I made my own body lotions as well. You can also make your own diffusers. So there's just a lot of options when it comes to fragrances. Also, I've been playing a lot of solitaire, obviously, but I've also been playing Goods Sort. I got suckered in. I watched an ad and I was like, oh, this game where you pull all these products into the same shelf and sort of match them. Oh, it looks like fun. So I installed it, played it for nonstop for a bit until I got really frustrated with the ads and deleted it. And finally, an actual pop culture pick. Check out New Jeans' new album that dropped this last 2 weeks. New Jeans is this K-pop band that we all love. Okay, Sam, give us the real, real pop culture pick this week.
I'm about to begrudgingly sign up for Peacock so I can finally binge watch Twisted Metal, which is another interesting video game franchise turned TV show. I haven't heard people talk about it. I don't know if it's just because on Peacock and not a lot of people are watching. Fair. But there's also some other Peacock shows like Poker Face and Miss Davis that I want to need to catch up on, too.
So tell me about Twisted, because I've seen the ads for Twisted Metal, I think, on my Google Home interface. I'm sorry, my Google TV interface. It looks so interesting. What is it about?
Well, the whole thing is about, the Twisted Metal franchise doesn't make any sense because it's about, weird characters who have cars and they just are in a destruction derby. And there wasn't really a story about that franchise until Twisted Metal Black. And that kind of really, like, introduced some of the backgrounds behind all the different characters. And, like, you know, Sweet Tooth is the obvious, most famous character. He's kind of a crazy clown, and he drives around in a messed up ice cream truck.
So are we going to watch a clown for this show?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I'm not watching it. I don't hate clowns, but...
Are you one of those people who's scared of clowns?
No, I love clowns. What? You know why I love clowns? Okay, you want to know the funny story why I love clowns?
This is gonna be good. Oh, okay. Yeah, lay it on me.
Tell me what the first four letters of the word clown is.
Oh, God. C-lo. Oh, no. That is the worst reason.
I love clowns because they have my name in the first four letter of the word. So whenever I go, like, create, like, when I want to have a gender neutral, like, gaming handle or something, I go with clown something. I always pick clown something. So.
Oh, God.
Yeah, there
clown
you go.
Clown face.
Clown face. No. I'll tell you what my actual name is later on so people don't find me and bash me online. But
you're spilling potentially secrets about your,
doxing
your internet handle.
Yes. Okay, but sounds like Twisted Metal could be fun. Is about a crazy clown driving a crazy car, right?
I know that the show was made. It's based on a franchise, video game franchise I used to play a lot. I have, like, have heard nothing about it, really. And so that's kind of why I'm curious to see what it actually turns out to be, because video game franchise turns into shows have not had a very good reputation, as we saw with last year's Halo show.
But Arcane.
Yes, Arcane is like the one exception, which actually reminds me, that should be coming out sometime in early 2024, I believe, but still a little ways away from that.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at...
Sam Rutherford on whatever you want to call that service.
If you want to send me your thoughts for gamer handles that start with the word clown, you can send them to me at SherlInstagram on Threads, at SherlInstagram on Instagram, or email me sher@engadget.com. Email us your thoughts about the show at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. You know what? I don't mind eating paper. Let's do it. 2 years.